Assyria. Assyria is the area that is dedicated to Asher. As a matter of fact, it's named after Asher, Assyria. And when you look at slide one, as you come to the page, you can see a map of Assyria. And inside the Assyria we're talking about, you're looking at Haran, which is a smaller twin city of Ur dedicated to Nanner. Then you're looking at Nineveh, which is, it's in the Bible, and I think it was Jonah and the whale, where Jonah was spit out at Nineveh, which he did not want to go, to talk about monotheism. And right in the heart of a major city filled with the gods. Then there's Asher, which is the city dedicated to the god Asher. And it was founded, that city, Asher, is an old city. It was founded by Noah's, I think it's his third son, Shem. Noah's son, Shem, founded Asher, named it after the god Asher. Strange, isn't it? How this works? So anyway, Noah had three sons. They're the only ones left. And of course, they had their women with them. And I believe two of those sons went to Enlil's side. One to Ninurta, the other one, I'm not sure. I'd say to Nanner, but I'm just not sure. And the third went to Enki's side, and Asher gets it. So Shem goes to this place, gets it started, calls it Asher, and population of humans begin there in Assyria long, long ago. So there's all this ties together. Asher, by the way, is also mentioned in the Old Testament or the Torah as the god that Yahweh respects, calls him a mighty warrior. Imagine that. Yahweh speaking highly of the god Asher. And Nineveh, when it was discovered, there were 30,000 texts. 30,000. Now, those were all arranged in like a library would be arranged today under the same type of organized rows. And of course, these texts were soft clay, where the stylus pushes its figures into the soft clay. And when it's done writing the text by the scribe, that soft clay would be fired hot, very hot, and it would turn basically to rock. And those texts lasted thousands and thousands of years. And when these cities were discovered, of course, they're, digging dirt to discover everything. Some of those texts are broken, some of them are not. And Nineveh was a shocker, what they found there. So the organization, the city being so advanced, and on and on. And again, Jonah and the whale, somehow that whale is in the, what is that, the Tigris River. Show me how a whale, I guess, goes up the Tigris River and spits Jonah out in Nineveh. So there you're looking at it. And what, do whales come from the Persian Gulf? Maybe so. We're talking a long time ago. Okay, so as we go through this, you got an idea about Assyria and how important Asher is. So when you go through these guides page, at the bottom of the page, it gives you a link to their city-state or their realm. So, okay. Slide number 2C, there's three of the Assyrian cities, and when you put your cursor on the artifact or picture, a description pops up. That description may be in the way of you viewing that artifact, so put the cursor on the other artifact opposite, and let the description pop up on it while you view the artifact you choose to view closely. So the slideshow has stopped. The description's out of your way. Take a good look at what you're looking at. And for instance, number 20, which is the third artifact, that is Enki, a statue of Enki. Okay? Now, that statue is life-size. And Enki, of course, is the god of the waters. Okay, and as we go through the next slide, is of a procession of the gods. And the gods are standing upon their animal symbols. And on their hat, you might find a symbol, you might not. But I tell you exactly who these are. And of course, it's my opinion that I have identified through the animal symbols and other methods. And of course, at the head would be the heir to be to the throne, Enlil's son. Enlil, the real heir to the throne, the crown prince, after his father Anu, King Anu, and then Enlil, then Ninurta. Ninurta is first in this parade. And his spouse, Bo, is second. I'm talking about on top of the animals. And as you can go right on down the line, and see who's who. So you got Enlil welcomes. Okay, the first one is Anu. He's holding the authority in his hand of the king. He's got a couple animal symbols, it looks like. Then his daughter, Bo, who is a doctor. Okay, and she's seated with her dog, very handy. And then you have Ninurta, who is the spouse to Bo and the son to Enlil, grandson to King Anu. Next, you have Nanner, who is on top of a horse. Well, no, that's not true. You have Marduk on top of his Mashushu symbol. Mashushu or something like that is how you pronounce that. That's his symbol. So there's Marduk behind Ninurta. Those two have nothing but war between them. Behind Marduk is Nanner. That's Enlil's son, Marduk being Enki's son. And Nanner's symbol, animal symbol, is a horse. Behind him is Adad, another one of Enlil's sons, and he's the god of thunder holding the lightning bolts, and his symbol is the bull. And behind him is Inanna, the goddess of love and war, and her animal symbol is the lion. Okay? So you've got Enlil standing on one end, Enki standing on the other end, and the parade starts with the king and goes right down the line. Every one of these that you see there are direct descendants of the king. And these are some of the very main gods that came to colonize Earth, except for King Anu went back to Nibiru. That's their home planet. So you can go through these slides faster by using the arrow to the right, or you can rewind your slide one at a time with the rewind arrow to the left. Okay, so let's keep going through this slideshow here, and you're seeing artifacts in different varieties and of a variety of different gods. Assyria, the gods were there, and so were the giant, semi-divine, mixed-breed kings. And more artifacts that come from Assyria. Let's go back here. What's going on there? Looks like she's drinking. That's probably Nengal, Nanner's spouse. But you can see behind the goddess seated on number 26 on the top is a smaller earthling. And you can tell the difference in size between the goddess and the earthling, as you can down below, between the god and the semi-divines. Very good slide is a black and white of artifact number 4 or 19B. Talking the same artifact. What you're looking at is, well, I'll just try to read the description to you. Assyrian artifact of Inanna, Adad, and an unidentified mixed breed king. Take a look at the size of these. And I would suggest that I'm wrong there. That is Shala, who is a dead spouse. And a dad, plus a giant, semi-divine, mixed-breed king. And look how much smaller that mixed-breed king is compared to the gods. And the earthlings are much smaller than the mixed-breed king. So you can see how that king plays a role of being the in-between man for the god to the earthlings. The king would pass the god's laws and rules down to the earthlings who are gathered around the ziggurat of that city. So around Adad's ziggurat would be a king appointed to be the king of that city. And that giant mixed breed is always given a position of authority over earthlings, always. Now, that may be a king, that may be a high priest who lives in the ziggurat with the god, and he is the god's butler. He's taking care of whatever the god's needs are for the day or the month. He's taking care of things. That could be food, that could be clothes, that could be anything that is required. The king is the butler, the high priest is the butler and will take care of that god. So the high priest is the go-between between the god and the ceremonies and homage paid to the god that is due to that god by the earthlings settling below the ziggurat, and the cities grow and grow. Next thing you know, the king from this city-state is going to go to war against the king from that city-state, and Earthlings had now learned very much about war, and it comes from the gods directing the mixed breed kings. They were much bigger than the Earthlings, so we're talking about bigger, stronger, faster, and walking is your transportation, smarter, and lives much longer than any Earthling. Now you can see here at the actual artifact here at 19B. I mean, let's look closely at this one. And that very well, that's a different artifact, but it gives you the idea of a cliff of a mountain with a rock carving. Now that is a huge, huge artifact carved into the side of this. And if you take a look at the Earthling down below and the size of everything else, you're pretty close to actual. So that's a heck of an artifact. I bet you anything that is destroyed by radical Islam as ISIS went through all of these areas, destroying anything they can find on the gods and the giant kings. We're talking thousands of artifacts, many of which I keep alive on my website, but you won't find them in the museum in Egypt anymore, or the one in Baghdad anymore, or anywhere else around there. And the ones that were on mountains, the mountain was blown up, the side of the mountain. These are just terrible, terrible loss. Thank God I have got part, or at least some very important artifact photos on this website. So please, if you can't find the artifact anymore, radical Islam destroyed it. And come to my website to have a look, which you won't find anywhere else, or very rare, I'll put it that way. And no one has organized this information for your ease of understanding. No one did that but me. And believe me, I had a lot of help. If you take a look at Artifact 19A, you're going to get an idea of what it's like war back then. That is a captive. It's a black and white of an artifact. That's a captive getting his eye poked out. There is a, let's see, is he held by a nose ring? Yes, they are. And this one's getting his eye poked out. We're talking about tremendous torture, tremendous pain inflicted upon the losers of that war. Especially if they capture a king or a leader of whatever town they captured. And you can see here artifacts of weapons of war, because Assyria's filled with it. Other artifacts, I suggest maybe you look at slide number 15. Take a look. These are not cavemen. These are not primitives. They may be in the way we think, but you take a look at how well they lived. Now that's amazing. But those are true, and you see these type artifacts. I mean, this is before Rome. This is before anything. It's amazing, the detail and the artistry. Do we really think primitive man did that? Let's keep in mind these ziggurats were around long before man. So there's some pretty cool artifacts. One very cool one is 5A. That's also number 5. You see this artifact in a man's hand. This is a star map. Incredible. Who would know this? the evidence is, by the way, the first language on Earth with the clay tablets and the stylus. You think caveman taught himself how to write and read? It's not how any of this happened. Artifact number 23 is a singer. Many different, we're talking music, medicine, schools. They have what we have. Okay, there's just many more artifacts that were found in Assyria. Another interesting one is number 6. That's the Babylonian map of the world. How would you like a map of the world? Who knows anything about what a world is? Here's a map. And then, number 29, you're talking about the clay tablet fired hot in cuneiform writing, the first written language on Earth. And this tale is about Cain, the biblical Cain. And Abel, Cain kills Abel and is cast out east of Eden. Some would say that's China, given the mark of the gods. Okay, Cain carries the mark of God. No beard. If you take a look at all the ancient men, they have long beards mimicking the gods who have long beards. Mankind has done nothing but mimic the gods' customs, the way they live, their bad habits, their good habits, war, you name it. We picked it up from them. And that goes for society after civilization after civilization. One after another established on Earth in different locations by these same gods. So a Viking god named so-and-so is the same Mayan god named such-and-such. Okay. The next one is a tablet of Noah's water clock. Number 7. Now, the water clock is how Noah knew when you better button down the hatch because it's preparation time is over. The flood is coming. That flood, by the way, if you would imagine, Enlil is interested in eliminating all these mixed breeds, especially the animal creatures that have been made into half this and half that, as Enki does these things, trying to create a worker beast. Couldn't get one that would work out for him because they can't understand commands and so on and so forth. Hard to handle, hard to tame. Anyway, through all these failures, Enki finally notices Homo erectus walking around down there in South Africa where they're doing gold mining. So let's try this creature. So Enki and then Herzog, his sister and love of his life, they decide to work in the lab to combine some type of their DNA mixture with this Homo erectus creature. And lo and behold, if you're a student of evolution, you would know that there is what they call a missing link. Man's evolution went from caveman to civilized man in cities with societal needs. Everything of a city that is needed, they had way back then. Now, you got to figure, how could any of this happen? And I suggest to you that it's in these artifacts right here. The Assyrian water clock, the Cain, whatever, these texts that you will not find anywhere else, these translations, they come from the hidden Oxford, Princeton, Yale, UPenn. This is where this stuff it has been hidden forever. And occasionally, they'll actually translate one. Now, if you look at, say, 28, that's a dictionary. Man. Look at number 13A. Okay, you're looking at the King's List out of, Assyrian artifact. This is where the word God or the concept of God is first understood. It's in Mesopotamia, the place where the first everything happened. And we're looking at one of the conquering states, Assyria, given to Asher. Rarely are you seeing Enki's bloodline coming in strong. Here, Assyria, Asher comes in strong. Babylon, Marduk comes in strong. Asher is Marduk's oldest son. And who the Egyptians called Osiris. And so, later, after Asher's fantastic run that he had with Persia and Assyria, he's dead. And his twin brother who killed him, Seth, he's off somewhere. He's being punished or killed. He's gone. So now the twins, the oldest two boys under Marduk, are missing. They're dead or one of them may be exiled. Who knows? I haven't studied it. Don't know what happened to him. But here you're talking about historical documents that somebody, I suggest the gods, took a lot of time putting this together and made sure it would last a long time for, let's say, earthlings of this time and date to have a good look at it for the first time. The public is having a very good look at something in a form that they can understand what's going on. Never before. Thank you for coming here. I hope you find benefits. Number 13, I told you, fantastic King's List. Wait till you read the King's List. It's a triple star. You can't miss it. Here's a Nineveh library tablet. Nineveh was obviously doing quite well. So was Babylon. So were many others. But Marduk and his family seemed to advance the earthlings much quicker and with many more riches than in the little side of the tree. So when you find these city-states under a Dad or a Ninurta or any of these things, they're not quite the same as far as the earthlings' advancements that you will find in Assyria by Asher or by Babylon by Asher's father, Marduk, Egyptian god Ra. Okay, excuse me here. That takes care of that. Asher's realm with his text. Here's what's... I don't have everything that's there by any means, but what I'm trying to show you is what I can access. This is it. And I'm trying to make it very easy to understand with artifacts if they relate. Anyway, you see a single star, and then you see a triple star under Sumerian King's List. I just can't stress enough how important it is to read the actual kings lists, which will include the kings before the flood. Open your mind before you open this text. It's an ancient one, and it had to be written by the gods. No way could man's history go back that far. Okay, so here are Assyrian texts, and out of that, the one that sticks out is the Sumerian kings list. Okay, next is the city Asshur. Asshur, spelled differently, is obviously the namesake city and capital of Assyria. Now, Asshur is an old city, old. And with its ziggurat, Asher's home. Now, Asher, it was founded, the entire thing was started by Noah's, I think it's his third son, Shem, the only one that was given to Enki's bloodline side of the family. And Here Shem is being handled under Asher. Shem couldn't be any more important than Noah, could he? I mean, that's his son who has to do the job of repopulating the earth. Tough work. But as Enki said to Enlil, when Enlil discovered Noah still lives, and mad as hell at Enki, Enki simply says, "Who will do the work now that you've killed them all off with your flood?" And imagine a controlled flood by taking an asteroid and throwing it into the ocean, creating tidal waves so big that it flooded everything. And with that came rains that just kept raining. 40 days, 40 nights, exactly as the text says in the Torah or Old Testament. Some of these things are very accurate. Some of that is just a very simple short story of which you can find more details and an earlier version here from the Mesopotamian texts. And so I put a website together about this, including the artifacts, with a description, a brief description, that the best I can tell you is what you're looking at. And I've become pretty knowledgeable here of what I'm talking about. Artifacts, for instance, number 5, and adjacent to it is number 4B. 4B shows you gods fighting gods. And then later, the gods earthlings from their city-state fought their cousin gods earthlings from their city-state. Enlil's descendants fighting Enki's descendants over supremacy on earth. Marduk thought his father got screwed. He should be running things. He's the first son, and he's the smartest son of the king. But he's not born of the double seed. So Enlil, who is born of the double seed, but younger, becomes the official heir to the king. Enki is robbed, according to Marduk, who wants to be in line for that kingship. Marty cannot be in line because it goes to Ninurta through Enlil. Well, what happens here? Marduk and Ninurta and all his brothers and others are fighting like crazy for a long period of time. They're killing each other's earthlings and they're trying to kill Marduk. Until finally, they send nukes that Enlil gives them, left over from Alalu, but there were 7 nukes given to him by Inno to his children to take care of and nuke Marduk. And there you have the story of, say, Sodom and Gomorrah. Or you might find the nuclear sands turned to glass and this blast and that blast. You might see scorched earth if from a satellite view of the Saudi Peninsula, and so on and so forth. The facts are the gods used nukes in Lilside against Inkyside because Marduk is claiming supremacy on everything. And at one time, he, sitting in Babylon, decided that he's the only god, and whatever authority Enlil had, Marduk claimed it. Whatever authority Enlil's sons had, Marduk claimed it. Even the authority of Marduk's family, like his father, Inki, Marduk claimed it. Marduk is attempting the very first attempt at monotheism, and he's doing it out of Babylon, claiming everyone's authority. Now that will upset a whole bunch of gods. I have no idea how Inki took that, but a whole bunch of Enlil's family is mighty upset what Marduk's trying to pull out of Babylon. Man, oh man, the bloodshed begins to roll. And you'll find in Shuber, such as in artifact number 5, she's sitting there, she's concerned for Inanna. Because Inanna, of course, has joined the fight. And there's Inanna with her foot on her animal symbol, the lion. The goddess of love and war. The lioness. And then it comes artifacts out of Asher again of early man and the gods. Lots of artifacts pertaining to the gods. These artifacts, for instance, it's not very easily looked at, but number 5B, and adjacent to it is artifact 5A. Looking at 5B, you see a round rock. That is a rock that was carved into that cylinder shape, and it's smooth. That is a smooth shaping of a rock, or, you know, of a thing like a rock, like lapis lazuli or something. Okay, but anyway, here you have this cylinder seal. And on that seal, after they create the round cylinder, they reverse carve a negative scene onto that round seal. Now imagine, and by the way, one mistake and throw it away. You know, one little slip of the hand. You're carving rock, a reverse scene on that itty bitty seal. And you're putting detail on this rock, this cylinder seal. Then you take that scene, this negative, and you find your wet clay, roll it across the wet clay, simply roll it, and you get the positive image of the scene. This must be a historical scene so important that the gods went through all the work of remaking this cylinder seal and creating the very first copy machine, printing machine, or should I say newspaper, if it had a text to this scene. So you add it up, and you're looking at man's very first major league invention. So it's an easy thing. Whatever the gods did, it must be recorded. You create the artifact, you roll it out on the clay, and you pass it around to all the city-states, and everybody through the high priest, gets to see what happened in this particular scene. Many times there's a text to go with it. So these, if you think about it, how can early man, caveman, who advanced a million years in evolution overnight, how did caveman all of a sudden reverse carve on rocks and know how to print? Give me a break. Give me a break. Now, later, they did try reverse carving and making artifacts, and you will see some sloppy artifacts, and you will quickly know the difference between the work of the gods and what they want recorded and the work of man. And every one of these makes sense to somebody on some kind of scene. Unfortunately, we lost a lot of the information. It is thousands and thousands of years old. So as we look at Asher's namesake city, you're seeing where it is right on the map. It's kind of in the heart of things up north. Then comes some artifacts. I kind of like number 4 is a black and white. I believe this is off of a cliffside. And what you see is a god. I would say a Zutu, because he's in a sun disk. You see the disk that this god is within. Now you take away the feathers, because it's just trying to tell you this god is flying in this disk. Make sense? We call them flying saucers today. But anyway, here sits this giant that looks, or should I say, that we look exactly like them. But they're so big. And look how advanced they are. What's going on here? Well, the whole story, or a good part of the story, is right here on my website. Never before told the way you're seeing it right here. So please spend some time. Keep looking. You're going to see a lot of things you've never seen before. Okay, you get into artifact, say 14. You're looking at Asher's house, his ziggurat, what's left of it. And there was a city down below there. That was Asher, named after Asher, who lives in that ziggurat. Now, those loyal earthlings, I'm sure, were fighting in those families, loyal earthlings. And Assyrian kings went to war. Wait till you see some of these texts. Anyway, we're going to go through this, and you see that ziggurat in many stages. As it's being excavated or as it's being discovered, it's interesting to see. And then Assyrian kings list and all these other things. So here, 2H, you're seeing an old photo of some artifacts in Asher being discovered right there in the dirt. As they excavate and excavate, they're amazed at how much they're excavating and how much information they're discovering. Take a look at the artifact adjacent to 2H, number 2I. My God, every bit of that is a mud brick about the size of your foot. Can you imagine building that ziggurat out of little mud bricks? And again, it's a mixture of the soil, the clay, and straw, and I don't know what else, fired hot. So hot that that brick is far stronger than our bricks. So they pressure tested them, these bricks. And they discovered that you could literally stand these bricks, one straight up, on top of the other, on top of the other, from Earth to the moon, and no brick would crumble. Imagine the strength of these bricks. What do they know in construction that we just don't, we're not able to do today? So if you look at the millions and millions of mud bricks that these gods made or had made, eventually as the worker race has developed, take a look. Just in two eyes, it'll blow your mind how many mud bricks these guys are discovering. And they keep going down deeper and deeper as they go. So it's just an example of the constructing with mud bricks. What these gods were able to do, they lived rather comfortably in these huge mansions. And these mansions were elevated so high above the earthlings below. They were well protected and insulated from a primitive earthling that might shoot at them. So they too have to look out for the blood they lose or the life they lose. Of course, we're sitting here thinking they live forever. They're immortal. And the giant mixed breed king, he's almost immortal, isn't he? He lives so much longer than us earthlings, and he continues to be king. So as you go through these artifacts, you will see that, you know, Asher, just like the whole of Assyria, is quite impressive. And you don't need to see tons of these stuff to get the idea. So I give you what I can, that in a variety that gives you the concept. Okay, under Asher, the slideshow, is the texts. And there's only one. And it's the creation account from Asher, the city, Asher. Marduk attempts his monotheism in this account. And I call it a must-read two stars, simply because the value of what Marduk is trying to do in this text. It starts major wars, Marduk, and his attempt at supremacy over the other gods. They're not going to have that. So anyway, after you read this, and I hope you do, you're looking at a couple quotes out of the Torah, out of the Old Testament. Genesis 6:4, the Nephilim were on the earth in those days. Everybody's heard the word Nephilim. And the days after, when the sons, check your Bible, when the sons of God went to the daughters of men, had children by them. So God is having sex with man's daughters and having children. And the children were the heroes of old, the men of renown, meaning they were the first kings who were demigod, mixed breeds, part God, part man. Right here in the Bible will tell you. They had sex with the daughters of men and had children, part God, part men. And those children, because they're of their clock that seems to last forever, and our clock, which only lasts so long, the one in the middle, the mixed breed, he's living much longer than the earthling and nowhere near as long as the god. He's much taller than the earthling. Let's say the earthling's 5 feet. just, you know, an approximate. The king is standing 8 to 10 feet. The god is standing 14 to 16 feet. So if you take the earthling at 5 feet and the god at 15 feet, you're talking about three times the size, and like the artifact shows, he could literally step on a human being and squish him. So simple. So you paid attention to the gods. You learned that the word God. You learned who God is to be called. And then Marty comes along and he tries to say, all you heroes of old and all you earthlings, I am the only God. I just took over Enlil's authority and Enki's authority, everybody's authority. And these heroes are living a very long time. So then, Genesis 3:22, I guess, and the Lord God said, the man has become like one of us. Who's us? Knowing good and evil, he must not be allowed to reach out his hand and take also from the tree of life and eat and then live forever. So what there is, according to Noah, there is the food of life and the elixir of life, all of which is controlled by Enlil, Earth Colony Commander. And he retires, Noah and his spouse, off somewhere that Gilgamesh, the king of Uruk, many thousand years later, is on a trip, on a quest, and he runs into Noah and his wife. He goes, my God, you're still alive? How can that be? And Noah tells him there's this plant of life and this elixir of life. And somehow, modern man, is looking for the fountain youth of life and so on and so forth. And I believe it comes from this quote in Genesis. And then, of course, these giant mixed breeds aren't living thousands of years. And as the Torah would tell you, Methuselah and so forth, they're the first 10 of them in the pantheon of heroes listed in the Torah, starting with Adam down to Noah, they all lived about 1,000 years. Man was not living that long, only giant mixed breeds. And they list them all for you, and they tell you, the Bible does, that they married their sister, their half-sister, because they don't have a sister. And they don't have a half-sister, then they marry their first cousin. They do so as an official wife so that they have sex and produce an heir of the double seed, an heir who is born of a mother who has all the advantages of the giant mixed breeds, and a father who has all the advantages of the giant mixed breeds. And together they produce a giant mixed breed who will have all his parents' advantages, be bigger, stronger, faster, smarter, and live much longer than the earthling. Then God's going to say, hold it, you're going to only live 120 years. That usually takes place after the flood. Because if you look at the king's list, Sumerian king's list, before the flood, wow. All I can say is you have to read that. It, again, is a text that has to be written by these gods. Okay, so then after the biblical quotes, which are the purpose of my website, by the way, and the purpose of all this hidden history, here you sit, these kings, and now they're doing the same thing that the Bible's heroes are doing. First 10 generations down to Noah, married as they did. The next 10 generations down to Abraham did the exact same thing. 20 generations under the Hebrews, they're marrying their sister. Abraham married his sister Sarah. Now, because they're giant mixed breeds that are faster, smarter, stronger, live longer, his wife Sarah becomes pregnant at age 100. Try that with a full-blooded earthling. With a semi-divine, no problem. It's easily done. All right, so here we go through. You got the semi-divines mentioned in the Torah, and you've got these semi-divines mentioned in these ancient cuneiform tablets. It's well worth looking at. And I try to star the ones that should be read first, that really have the information in it that is important to know. So anyway, whatever artifacts I can show you, I'll show you for each of these kings. And there isn't much I can tell you about any of them other than what Wikipedia tells you and what artifacts I discover out there. Scroll down to Tukulti-Ninurta 1. Okay. You're looking at, I guess that's an altar. Under 6DE, take a look at that. You've got all types of different types of beings on earth. And you have symbols all over the place. Here's the reverse side of it. These artifacts have lasted thousands of years. Look at that. Imagine a cuneiform on a mace. But this is a ceremonial mace for a king. And it's in the Louvre. It still exists. ISIS did not destroy it. And these texts, you don't look at them and learn something by looking. So they're not too worried about the texts. You don't find too many willing to translate and give it to the public. No, these are translated and hidden by the Masons, which is another total story. Look at these artifacts. Now take a look at it. It's 6G. You're looking at the side of a cliff. Asher, the god on the left, brings the Tukulti-Ninurta before Ninurta and the dad. You got three gods there and a king on his knees. Asher's in the middle. Ninurta is first, then Asher, then the giant mixed breed king, then Adad. It is amazing. The next slide, 6A, it gives you an example of the wall. And look at the text all over it. Come on. This is the stuff ISIS blew up. And there's damn good reason, isn't there, if you're trying to keep your people totally ignorant of what you really are, where you come from, who you are, what your ancestors did. They don't want you knowing they even existed. Anything prior to Muhammad isn't talked about very rarely. And for the Christians, anything prior to Jesus is rarely talked about, if any. See? The Torah, before you even get into those 10, working down to Noah, there is a ton of history. Now, imagine as you read Genesis, going through the kings there in Genesis, it's telling you so-and-so lived 1,000 years, had such and such as his heir, and a whole bunch of other kids, like lots of kids, because they lived 1,000 years. There's only one heir. And then he lived 1,000 years, had this heir, and that's all they tell you. And then the next one lived 1,000 years, 900, and had this heir, and that's all you know. Now, that's thousands of years of history. The Torah, the Bible, tells you nothing about. If you want to know that there actually was history prior to Jesus Christ in the B.C. era, when man was just a caveman with everything in a city, during this period is where you're going to find in Mesopotamia man's beginning, how it happened and how he advanced and how the gods kept updating him. All of a sudden, Homo erectus becomes Homo sapien. There went 1 million years and nothing flat. And today we're Homo sapiens sapien. The modifications keep coming from the gods. There is much in our DNA we do not even know. We find that there are parts of DNA that is not found anywhere on Earth. Therefore, it had to be brought to Earth. One would call that an alien. Okay, so you're seeing incredible artifacts, wall reliefs that are destroyed, others that aren't. These things survive. Just a few I show you. Artifacts out of Tukulti-Ninurta I. Then comes in the next guys, and you're seeing there's no three stars, no two stars. Keep scrolling down. You see king after king, and a little bit of text, if there are any text on them. You get down to Nazarpol I. Take a look at slide 9B. Look at that obelisk. Now that obelisk has scenes, four sides, has scenes and text. Look at the size of that. Man can't even stand that tall to carve it. Whatever. So here you come, there's Stelis. Look at the age of that Stella, Vesher Nazarpol I. These artifacts, now this Stella has cuneiform text to it, and it has the king, the giant, pointing at symbols of the gods that are all above his head. Those symbols are relating this king to the gods, his ancestors. Look at that. Many artifacts, well, for this guy, Asher Nazarpol II, there are like, two or three artifacts? Not many. But what I show you is interesting. Next is going down and down. Now, the annals of Asher Nazarpol, I'm giving you a double star on that. I suggest you read that. Two stars, only a three star has more information. So if you want to pick up a little something about these giant mixed breeds or these giant gods, take a look at the two and three stars and the one stars. Okay, we keep going down and keep going down. And you can see we're at Tukulti-Ninurta II. We're 900 B.C. I mean, we've gone a long way. And you're seeing lots more artifacts on these guys are being discovered. This particular guy's got just a few that I show. And next, Ashurbanipal 2 and text. There's a double star text. It's the annals of Ashurnasipal 2. It's the king telling you what he did and why the god made him do it. Okay. It's interesting. Next, Shalmaneser 3, you got a 2-star and a 1-star. And again, you've got obelisks last thousands of years. Try to read the ones that are starred. Under Shamashadad 5, look at artifact 16E. Do you see the difference in height? You see that the shem, the reverse carved cylinder seal, do you see that to the left? And the positive printed image to the right. And what do you see on the image? Something they decided should be recorded, 800 BC. And thank goodness they did. You're looking at our actual history. Okay, not much on him either did I put. Not much on the next guy. We can go through these kings pretty easy, just depending on how closely you want to look at them. For the purpose of time, I'm going to go rather quickly. Sargon II, for instance, that is Asher's giant semi-divine mixed breed descendant. A descendant of Asher, the god. I bet he's protected by that god, or one of the gods, depending on where that king is set. Sennacherib, another descendant related to Asher. And Esarhaddon, another. And Esarhaddon, there's tons of texts. One, a star, a 2-star, another 2-star. So, you know, they're there for you depending on your time. You can go faster through these slideshows using the arrows. And by the way, you can restart any of the slideshows by hitting refresh. Just hit your refresh button. And so under these kings, what artifacts I do show you, they all become war artifacts. And again, more descendants of the gods. More homage to the gods. And under Ashurbanipal, you've got a 2-star, 1-star, 1-star. It's information if you'd like to know. And of all these texts, there's a couple that are starred. It just makes it easier for you. As I color code things, as I star mark things, and when you get into the text, you'll see I try to give you an explanation for every this and that. I color code it so you get an instant idea of who we're talking about, a demigod or a god. Or an earthling. Who are we talking about? So here is Assyria. And through Assyria, that's lasting a very long time. Let me try to get back up to the top here. These guys were brutal. What they did to the defeated kings. Incredible. So there's quite a bit here under Assyria, and I would imagine there's tons and tons more. As I said, just Nineveh at 30,000. tablets. Come on. Well, I certainly appreciate you bearing with me through this as I stumble, bringing ideas before you. And I think if you spend more time in looking at the variety that is in front of you, you will see how every piece fits together. Every one of these pages, every one of these historical happenings recorded for thousands of years now available to the public through this website and others, but nothing like this. Please come back. Please accept my thanks and appreciation for coming in the first place. I certainly hope I helped you and understand a thing or two. That is the purpose. Knowledge. Believe it or not, that's what Jesus' brother James said. It was Peter who went under the faith idea with Paul. It was the brother of Jesus who went with the knowledge concept. And if you read certain things like in the Nag Hammadi, Dead Sea Scrolls, okay, the Nag Hammadi Scrolls, they're all the forbidden gospels. And when you read some of these forbidden gospels, you would find out what Jesus says about knowledge. Okay, well, again, thank you for coming. I hope you got something out of it, and I hope you come back. Well, that's that for Assyria.